Welcome to the National Lewis University Discover You podcast. You know, a lack of education on mental health often leads to even more mental health problems in those who are affected. Unfortunately, this is a very big issue for people with autism spectrum disorder, which leads to their condition getting worse. My name is Keith Baltimore. In this week's episode, Vez Osmani will join us to talk about autism spectrum disorder and teach us about the different aspects.
Hi, everyone. I'm Vez Osmani. I'm the Director of Disability and Access Services here at NLU, and I've been here for about 16 months now. I've been in the disabilities field for over 30 years in different areas, from teaching to actually teaching employment skills to young adults to teaching young adults who identify as autistic in traditional college courses, while also teaching them life skills in other programs. So thank you for having me, Keith.
So I want to start by asking you to share with those who are listening, what would be a great way to begin to share or describe to someone autism?
So the way I would describe autism is it's a complex developmental condition. It involves persistent challenges with social communications, which some people who identify as autistic may be nonverbal. Some autistic people have repetitive behavior. It affects their perception. And then, you know, a lot of autistic people have sensory issues. So if I think of autism, those are probably the top three, four items that I mentioned. It's sensory, it's communication, it's restricted interest, and it's that repetitive behavior.
Yeah, I think sometimes they have, many have an impression about what it physically looks like, how it physically manifests itself. So can you share with some of us, how does that show up? And we know this is not everyone's a monolith and it's very different, right. But what are some of the common ways that autism manifests itself in a person?
Okay, so this is a great question. What I want to be really careful about saying is, every autistic person is different, right? So it's going to look different in all of them. So the saying is, if you've seen one autistic person, you've seen one autistic person.
That's great.
And so I want to be careful when we're saying this. But, you know, we think of, you know, many people here as limited eye contact. If you're having a conversation with somebody, they don't engage, and socially awkward in groups or socially awkward communicating. They also have a lack of proficiency with nonverbal gestures, right? Autistic people also may take certain conversations or sayings very literally. So, you know, you say something like, go fly a kite, when we use it as, you know, just a term, they literally think that we're saying, go fly a kite. So it's difficult for them to keep friends because of that social barrier that they have. And making those social connections with their peers. So that looks a little bit different. Some autistic people may stim, which they may also rock back and forth, pacing back and forth in a classroom or just in a home setting, making certain sounds that are repetitive all of the time. They also have a set routine that they like, so they're doing the same thing over and over, or may eat the same foods and don't want to detour from that same schedule that they have. So again, I want to be very careful in saying that it looks different in all autistic people. There's not one autistic person that is the same from another, but these are some of those, I guess, characteristics that may lie in some of somebody who identifies as autistic.
I think that was a great explanation and description of that. And just repeating something that you said, I think is really important, is that autism does not manifest itself the same way in everyone. But as you were describing it, I would imagine that a lot of people, particularly those in education, might read an autistic child as a behavioral problem immediately. Like on the surface, it looks like this is a child who's just being, just a bad child. Adults want the children to be respectful by looking at them, and then you know how the child feels because the child communicates to you, directly in words. And I find that very interesting. And I think what you just said would be helpful to a lot of people who may think they know someone who is autistic, but particularly for our school here at National Lewis University, where we really prioritize teaching and training teachers, having that knowledge and awareness that a child may be mislabeled or categorized as being troubled, and they're not troubled, they could just be autistic.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Keith, what I say is some autistic people, and especially I'll relate to nonverbal autistic people, they are trying to get a message across. They're nonverbal. So that's our first, right? So our role as educators is pay attention to body language, pay attention to facial expression, pay attention to what that student is trying to tell us. Because when the behavior comes, it's because we're not listening and we're not focusing on what they're telling us. Their behavior is letting us know, I need something. Please do this for me. And this is my only way to express this. So, you know, it falls on us to really be keen on what's going on within those surroundings and what message is being sent to us. And that's why I say listening and really looking and paying attention. That's really important because the autistic person does not want to have a behavior. They don't want to be labeled as bad or be labeled as not paying attention or disrespectful. They are trying to get a message across. And then our verbal autistic people, well, they get frustrated. We have teachers who speak too fast, right? So what I say is, let's bring ourselves down to the learning needs of our student. Let's pay attention. How do they learn? Let's get to know them, right? What are their needs? So when our students are getting frustrated in a classroom because they're not understanding something, it's because on one end, we're not paying attention to meet their needs. And I think that's really important in the roles that we're in.
So, Bez, you are a director here at NOU, and you just had a name change for your office. Is that right?
We're going through it now. So it took a little while, but we are. It's going to be the Office of Student Accessibility Resources, which allows resources for all students on campus to be more inclusive because we have our neurotypical students who also come into our office and ask if they can use certain resources. They don't want to identify as having any challenges, but still require some support. And I want to make sure we can provide that. So it's including all neurodivergent students with our neurotypical students to make it a welcoming. When we talk about diversity, equity, and belonging, that's what I want our department to be. I want it to be a belonging center for all.
That's amazing. And I'm celebrating with you that your name change and this great new emphasis that you're putting on, putting out there for us. So you're a director, and I don't want to put you in this in the position of a historian or a medical doctor,
No, I am not.
but I would imagine that you may have hopefully some knowledge about how autism is created or developed or starts. And there is a lot of conversation, and we don't have to go into that right now for a lot of reasons about vaccines, controversy around vaccines, and the role that they play in autism. Share with me or us your thoughts.
So, you know, Keith, my thoughts on this, it's very hard for me to, I guess for anyone really to, I don't take side either way because we have families that are really strong on either side, whether it's the vaccine issue, but the way it is medically diagnosed is as a neurological disorder. So if you ask a medical professional, they're not going to say that it's based off of vaccines. And it was once related to the MMR vaccine. And I think the history behind that was because the vaccine is given around the time a child is diagnosed. So they're saying that that's the relatable issue. And so a long time ago, I'm going to do really brief. There was a gentleman named Wakefield who did a per se per study on the reason the high rise of autism in young people. And what he linked it to was the MMR vaccine. But what he omitted was that the people suing the vaccine companies were hired by a lawyer that was also working with Wakefield. So in the end, I guess I'm going to go to the end. What ended up happening was all these research or studies that he and his team did was deemed, boy, I want to say this, it was deliberate and it wasn't really, it wasn't true. So it was had to be retracted. The whole story had to be retracted because they say the story, it ended up being, it was not linked to MMR. Now, again, I don't want to alienate any families who believe that. Everybody has their own system of belief, and I completely respect that. But, you know, I myself will base it off of what I think research in medical and off those terms, just based on what I do in my field and my background. But again, everybody is. Has a right to believe what they believe in. And I can't speak of somebody who has an autistic child, so I will never assume anything on my end. I think that's a little disrespectful for families who do deal with that daily.
Since we've been talking, you've used the word neurodivergent, and since my awareness of autism, the word neurodivergent is relatively new. Can you help us understand if it is appropriate to use the word interchangeably with autism, and if not, why not? I guess what I'm really asking is, what is neurodivergent in comparison and in alignment with autism?
So autistic people or those who have neurological differences are referred to as neurodivergent. Instead of seeing autism as a disorder, it's people use the term neurodiverse. So neurodiverse is derived or neurodivergent is derived from neurodiverse. It recognizes the rich differences, abilities, and strengths in autistic people and other neurodiverse people who identify with a different type of disability. So that's where neurodivergent comes. And I would say if you're going to refer to an autistic person, it's language first. So autistic person, not person with autism.
Can you help some of us understand what does it mean to be on the spectrum? And you've kind of addressed this already in a way, but that's another word talking about language that folks will hear associated with autism. So help us understand how that fits into this discussion.
So, you know, there was a time, Keith, that autism had so many words that it was used to describe autistic people. Autism spectrum disorder is now the political proper term to use to identify all autistic people, as they used to say, you're on the spectrum. We're not using the language of high end, low end. It's autism spectrum disorder. And that's how our autistic people are identified. That really says, we're all different. We're autistic. We're neurodivergent. But we're not classified as low functioning, high functioning because that's not appropriate anymore.
My very trusted editor, Ahmed, who is just so great. We were doing some research and we came across some information around autism and gender. And in regards to there being a common, perhaps we can describe it as a misunderstanding that more males, boys in particular, are labeled as autistic as opposed to girls, which means that there's the potential for women and girls to not be supported because no one is actually even looking for it to that behavior in them. What is your response around this? This focus on seeing perhaps boys as being autistic and neurodivergent and not necessarily girls.
So I would say in this day and age, we're getting better at not just saying just boys are autistic. It is more females. It's more seen. In past years, I would say these last 10, 20 years, the common denominator they would say is more males were getting autism or being labeled or diagnosed as autistic. But as research has gone on, now more females. So both males and females are being diagnosed with autism, and they are and the treatments now are the same, obviously, for males and females. But you know, it's again, we talk about that evolving, research is evolving, and researchers, doctors, they're more aware to see the signs, and looking for now both equally in males and females, and not just to gender specific to males.
That's excellent. Speaking of males, you had invited an amazing performer to campus, and I want you to tell us more about that. Who you invited and why did you invite him? What happened there?
So I invited Cody Clark. Cody Clark is a magician. He's an autistic person, and it was Autistic Acceptance Month for April. So my point of view, it was when we're holding events specific to a disability that we are learning about or educating our community about, I don't feel that I'm the right person to educate the community. And I think it comes from the person who experiences that diagnosis. So having Cody here as an autistic person doing a magic show in his full Cody, who he is as a person and how he functions daily, and for us to see that being autistic or any type of disability doesn't make you less than anyone, and you're capable of reaching high strides in any goal that you have. And that's what Cody did. He gave us that show, the magic show. He did a great job. He was his authentic self. People connected, people learned. The feedback was amazing at how wonderful it was that somebody within our, or somebody was invited who identifies as autistic, did a great show, did not hide who he was as a person, and taught us during that magic show what who he was as an autistic person and what he was capable of. And that's what, when we're educating our NLU community, I'm very intentional about how we do it in a manner that's respectful to what we're doing, and having somebody who represents that, so having somebody teach us, who understands it from a personal point of view and who can do it authentically.
I agree. So kudos to you on
Oh,
bringing
thank you.
him to the community. And that brings me to the work that you're doing. I see bringing Cody to campus as a great way to celebrate the community and to teach others. So tell us more about what you are doing and what you hope to do within your new Office of Student Accessibility. And
It's the stu it, you just got me all confused. It's the Office of Student Accessibility Resources. So
Student
the
accessibility
purpose of,
resources.
yeah, the purpose of this, I guess, molting or evolving office is really to offer more services. Again, when we talk about your role as the executive director of disability, excuse me, diversity, equity, and belonging, these communities, we all work together, whether it's race, abilities, right? It's all of this. So we're all working together. And my mindset is always, how do we include everybody so that it fits this DEIB belonging model? And that's what I wanted for this department. In my time here at NLU in the last 15 months, I've had a handful of students who do not identify with any disability, but may have challenges along the way, come in my office and say, "Hey, I need some help with this, but I'm not sure if you can help me because you're disability services." So, you know, after having a nice conversation with a lot of these people, what they found out is, yeah, we can help them. We don't have to be disability services to help our students or even our staff. What we have to be is accessible. And that was the goal, is to make sure we're accessible to all on campus and that all feel welcome in this office to use resources that we have. And it may not be a note taker, but may be as simple as having a recorder for a class to get them through a course. And that was the reason for all this. I took a lot of thought this past 15 months to make sure I did surveys with students. I asked faculty in the education NCE. So I was really intentional about how to do this and to make sure that I had input. Because it's important. This wasn't a name change because it was personal to me. This was a name change for the students at NLU, for our staff and faculty, to make sure that they see that we want everybody to be included. That was the goal: inclusion, included, belonging, a coming of together of everybody.
Tell us maybe just a few examples of the services your office provides, and give us some examples of what you hope to do in the future.
Oh boy, I'm going to get in trouble for that one, but I will. First, I'll tell you. So what we do is the supports we provide through the office. I'm still using this new name, right? I'm getting used to it. It's the Office of Student Accessibility Resources. So I'll talk about our autistic students, and then I'll talk about general accommodations we provide maybe for all students. So we provide note takers, right? And actually in the past, before or when I first got here, we used peer note takers, which was another student in a classroom taking the same course, giving you their notes. But that was really hard. It was difficult. And you know, you're relying on somebody else's notes to understand what they were doing. So we purchased a software this year, which is called Glean note-taking software. Let me tell you, that has made such a difference to our autistic community, and just our students and all who are receiving accommodations. It's a software they put on their computer. They click a key. It takes all the notes from the faculty and then it transcribes it to them. So we're using both, right? So we have our auditory learners and we have our students who really like to see those words on paper. They got to see it, not just hear it. It's been a game changer for us and we have such a high demand for it, which is wonderful. But the feedback for it is, I can't believe this exists. And I thought it has. It just took me a while to get it. We also provide text-to-speech, which is natural reader for a lot of our students who require that. And that is uploading a PDF or a book, reads it to them, because you know a lot of our courses have PDFs. That's also, you know, for our auditory learners, again, it really helps them learn, meet their learning needs. And again, very specific about what are your learning needs and how can we meet it. I'm very intentional in my area of doing just that. If somebody says, this is how I learn, this is how I sit, this is where I need to be. As a university, and as we think about these students moving into the employment field 4 years from now, we want to make sure they're prepared by providing these resources and these supports to get them there, right? The littlest things helps them move forward and propel them. So I do weekly check-ins with a lot of our autistic students. And what that provides them is accountability. How's your homework? What are you doing? What are you having a hard time with? Well, are you scheduling your assignments? And that really helps them with their time management. So I coach them through time management pieces because a lot of students have a difficult time in that, or difficult, I guess, yeah, time in that area of scheduling their time, doing exams, some work. And we know we have our community, we have a lot of their students who are work. We have a lot of our students who are first gen students. So they don't have the support at home, and I provide that. We do it weekly, whether it's myself or the specialist, Kedra. We ask our students after every consultation, would you like a weekly meeting? You know, and we wear a lot of hats at NLU, but I can tell you my primary hat is making sure our students are serviced. So right now I have about 43 students I meet weekly with, half hour, 15 minutes. It's on a Saturday, on a Sunday, after hours. Again, meeting their needs because the word in our department is accessibility, right? And my goal was when I proposed this name, if we're not accessible, then what am I doing here? What are we doing here? If we're not accessible to our working students, then the whole name or the whole department really doesn't make sense. And that's what we're trying is breaking down barriers. So we also provide an accommodation breaks as needed. So we have students who can't maintain a long focus on a Zoom class. So they're allowed to turn off their Zoom, but still listen. They're still there. They just don't have their cameras on, which is okay. We make sure that we refer them to learning support. We also refer them to our wellness and counseling center. We provide monthly workshops tailored around the need. So it could be how to study for a test, how to schedule your assignments, breaking down barriers in your classroom, self-advocating, how to advocate to your faculty if you have needs, because a lot of students do have a hard time advocating, especially you know, even our first year our first generation students who do not have that family of support, but they aren't receiving services to disability. They will come in and say, I'm not sure how to ask my teacher about this. Well, let's talk about it. Again, that's where that piece of inclusivity comes in, is applying that to around to all of our students and not just to one general area. So those are some of the things we do. I can do a whole list for you, but those are just I guess the main things that we start out with a lot of our students.
That's amazing. It sounds like you guys are really busy.
We
That's
are. We are very busy.
a lot of things that you're doing. And I think just from listening to that list of, resources and services you provide, I would imagine as hard as we work to communicate this out to people, that a lot of people would be really surprised to learn that we offer all of these different types of services to our students. I just think that's great.
I think, just in general, student affairs in our areas that are all working together, we provide so many services, and I don't think that it's really fully understandable in some areas, but there are a lot of services that we're providing from every department. And I think that's the key fact is to help our students become successful is that they have all these services and all these supports, and people are working really hard to make sure that they get them. So I think that's key. I think just understanding what we provide for these students to support them, to get to know them, not just a student, but as a human being, as a person. Because that's what they are first before they walk through our door. They're a person, then they're a student. So these services and supports from all of our areas really help that person become a better student.
So that brings me to a good question, I think, for many of us who are listening, and maybe we don't know someone who is autistic or neurodivergent, or we do, and we're wondering how we can support, how we can help, or what we should do and what our response should be. What would you share with those who are not at NOU, but maybe they care about someone or know someone or meet someone who is autistic or neurodivergent? What are some things they should keep in mind or consider when engaging others?
So that's a great question. So I want to start out with when you're talking to an autistic person, don't assume that an autistic person has low cognitive ability, right? Speak to them in a manner that you would speak to anybody else with respect. If you're speaking to an adult, you speak to an adult like you would any other adult. If you're speaking to a child who is 10 years old, you speak to that 10-year-old child like any other 10-year-old child or neurotypical. Being respectful of who they are. Say what you mean and be precise. So what I mean by that is if you're asking them a question, ask a direct question without a lot of fillers. And I call it a word diet. If you want to say, do you want to go to the store without saying, do you want to go to the store, Walmart, Meijer, or Sam's Club? You just say, do you want to go to the store? The rest of it is not important. And I know, so we take a lot of this for granted, but it's really important because when I talked before that, a lot of autistic people take things literally. So we have to be careful how we're communicating. Take the time to listen. I spoke about that earlier, whether it's verbal or nonverbal. Let's focus on the person. Let's focus on the message they're sending, whether it's through body language or whether it's through a verbal message. And I think that's really important. And if you have for a question and you've asked, wait for a response. It's the it an autistic person is not being rude because they didn't answer you right away or they're not looking you in the eye. It's not disrespectful. It's a characteristic. Let's take our time. Let's wait. Allow them the patience to get their message out. They will. We just have to be patient about it. And that's what we have to remember. When I talk about that, we're all different learners and we're all different people and we have all different challenges. I mean, sometimes it takes me a while to get a thought out, right? So when you're just speaking to an autistic person, same thing. Allow them the time to respond in the manner that they do respond. Again, respecting who they are as a person. If you're providing feedback, make it meaningful, precise. Again, omitting those word fillers and using a word diet, less is more in this case. And then I think mostly when you're speaking to an autistic person and they're in a group, speak to them. Don't speak to the group about that person. Or sometimes I've had in the past where I've had a parent and a student, and the parent is answering the question, and I've had to say, oh, let's hold up a minute. I was talking to your child. He can answer me or she can answer me. And that just halts it because they're in the room. They're present. Let's allow the presence to be there.
Thank you so much for listening. And big thanks to Fez for joining us in this episode and sharing some very valuable knowledge with us. We hope to see you on the next one.